her voice bored. Her friend pointed toward my dress, making big, stabbing motions with her index finger. When Gina pulled off her own sunglasses, her jaw dropped. She immediately left the diffuser booth and walked toward me, mouth open, like she was being drawn by some invisible tractor beam.
OMG, is that not the cutest thing ever? Love this. So retro. And look, Gina gasped. The puppy has a matching outfit. Seriously, Aria, how stinking cute is that?
Too cute, Aria said. Cutest dress ever. And the cherries and the rickrack on the pockets, how fun is that?
So fun, but you know what my favorite part is, the skirt.
Gina pulled the fabric out wide from my body. Look how it moves. Aria nodded deeply. And with that fabric and the fitted waist, it'd really hide your butt.
Exactly shows off your curves.
Gina picked up her head, as if finally realizing I was a person instead of a mannequin, and said, Where did you buy this?
I didn't buy it. I made it.
You made it? Their mouths dropped open again, simultaneously. I nodded. My booth is right over there. Would you like to take a look? If somebody asked me how to make a success in your first attempt selling stuff at a craft fair, I'd tell them to have an adorable animal model their product and, if at all possible, have two sisters visiting from New Jersey with voices that really, really carry be the first customers of the day. Gina and Aria bought two dresses, two skirts, two dog jackets, and took two of the business cards I'd thought to have printed only the day before.
Would you do mail order to New Jersey? They asked anxiously.
Sure, I said. I mean, I guess so. Shoot me an email.
Oh, we will,
Gina said earnestly as another customer tapped me on the shoulder, asking if the medium would fit a size 12, only to be interrupted by still another customer who wanted to know if I had the cherry print available in extra large. Luke came back to check on me around 1 o'clock, bringing a chicken wrap and a lemonade for my lunch. I didn't have time to eat it, or to deal with the steady stream of customers who kept pouring into my booth. By the time he arrived, I'd already sold 14 dog jackets, 8 skirts, 13 dresses, and taken full payment deposits for 3 more dresses with matching dog jackets. If I'd had more help and more stock, I'm sure I would have sold even more. Seeing my predicament, Luke jumped in and gave me a hand, making change, bagging up product, and answering questions. It was pretty funny, hearing him launch into his sales pitch.
That's the thing about this dress. It looks good on any body shape, but especially women with curves. The fabrics are all 100% cotton, so you can toss them right into the washing machine. And they're really fun to wear. Hey, Grace, he'd call out. Do that thing you do.
Then I would smile and spin around in a circle, making my skirt flutter and twirl, and he'd look back at the customer and say,
See? Fun, right?
So fun, they'd answer, and hand him their money. 3 times that day, customers looked at Luke, then me, and asked, Is he your husband?
Just my friend.
Really? They said, looking impressed. Nice friend. When the market closed at 5, my unsold stock included 14 dog jackets, 9 dresses, and 0 skirts. We'd sold every one of them. In addition to that, I had 8 special orders that needed to be filled. It didn't take nearly as long to pack up as it had to set up. When we were done, Luke and I went to a nearby bistro with dog-friendly outdoor seating for souvlaki, beer, and a post-market briefing.
Okay, Luke said, after tossing a bit of lamb down to Maisie, who gobbled it down and looked up at him, hoping for more. Here's what we learned today. 1, you need to rig up some kind of curtain in the corner so people can try on the dresses. 2, you need a full-length mirror so they can see how they look. 3, you need more 1s and 5s in the cash box so you can make change.
And a system for accepting credit cards, I added.
Right, he said. 4, everything I told you about starting small and going slow was completely wrong.
He shook his head slowly, as if he was still trying to wrap his brain around everything that had happened that day. I didn't blame him. I was feeling the same, excited but overwhelmed and a little bit dazed.
You can't do this part-time, Grace. No way can you work for Monica and run Twirl and Whirl. This is a full-time job, and then some. In fact, you need to hire some help, and soon. There's no way you can do all the sewing by yourself.
Hire some help? As in an employee?
Luke, you can't be serious. We took in a lot of money today, but like you said, I need to put it back into the business. Fabric for the first batch of dresses was free. From here on out, I'll have to buy it. Plus, I need to eat and pay my mortgage. How am I supposed to support an employee if I can't even support myself?
Grace, he said earnestly, moments like this don't come along often. When they do, you've got to grab them. Either you go big or you go home. That's all there is to it.
Okay, fine. But how?
Luke picked up his beer bottle and took a swig. You have to borrow some money. There's no other way. But I've got...
No.
I held my hand up flat, cutting him off before he could say anything more.
Thank you, I said more gently. But no, I won't borrow money from you. You've been great, Luke. You've been a lifesaver. And this day has been...
I took in a breath and lifted my head, examining the clouds in the clear May sky, searching for words that might express all I was feeling, coming up short.
Amazing. More than amazing. And it might not have happened without you, so thank you. Thank you so much. But what to do next is my problem.
Okay, he said. Fair enough. But can I just make two more observations?
Sure,
I said, spearing a tender, delicious bite of souvlaki with my fork and dipping it into cucumber sauce before popping it into my mouth.
Go ahead.
Number one, he said, leaning in and raising an index finger to begin the countdown. I started to laugh.
Do you always talk in lists?
I asked, giggling and taking a sip of beer. Do you always interrupt? He countered, grinning.
Yeah, pretty often. If you're going to hang out with me, you'd better get used to it. You were saying?
Number one, he repeated. As problems go, this is an awesome one.
Isn't it? I still can't believe it. Did you see the way they were?
Luke cleared his throat and shot me a look.
Sorry, I got excited. I'm actually feeling a little giddy. Go on, you were saying.
Number two, you don't have to solve this problem tonight. Tonight, just bask in the glow and enjoy your success. You were terrific today, Grace. Really, I'm so proud of you. And by the way, if I haven't mentioned it before, he said, lifting his beer bottle and tilting it toward me in a silent salute. You look terrific, too. Where'd you get that awesome dress?
What, this old thing? It's just some rag I bought off the rack. But do you know what's great about this dress?
Let me guess. Luke tapped his chin, pretended to think. 100% cotton, machine washable?
Yes, but more importantly, it moves. In fact, I'd say that this is a dress that's just made for dancing.
Or would be, if only I knew how to dance.
Such a waste. Especially with the fairy dog mother's ball just a couple of weeks away. I heaved a sigh, picked up my beer glass, and took a drink. Say, Luke, you don't happen to know of any place around here that gives classes, do you?
Chapter 32. Monica. The crowd was light on Sunday night, and I was worn out from catering the wedding the day before, so when Bob showed up to have dinner around 8, I sat down to join him. Over his objections, I insisted on picking up the bill, a small token of thanks for putting up with rotten Alex and helping him have such a great season, then ordered insalata caprese, linguine with clam sauce for 2, a bottle of Pinot Gris, and proceeded to drink and talk way, way, way too much. I shouldn't be jealous, I said, filling my glass for a third time. And I'm not, I insisted, responding to Bob's doubtful look. Okay, he said, twirling linguine onto his fork, a skill I had taught him earlier in the evening and which he had quickly mastered. Good, because it would be terrible to be jealous of Grace. She's your best friend. Right, which is why I'm not jealous. I mean, so what if she hit the ball out of the park her very first month in business? So what if Luke is clearly mashed on her and bent over backward trying to help and she doesn't even get it? So what if she's doing so great that she doesn't have time to work here and left me short a waitress? So what? I can always find another waitress, but I'll never find another friend like Grace. No, you won't. What you, Nan, and Grace have is very special. Right, which is why I'm thrilled that her condo has shot up in value since she bought it, and she's going to be able to take out a second mortgage, even though she isn't getting a paycheck now, and that her rich aunt Ricky in Milwaukee was willing to co-sign so she could borrow $50,000 to get her business off the ground without having to grovel to the bank for financing like the rest of us poor slobs. Good for Grace. I'm happy for her. I am. I know you are, Bob said, swallowing his linguine. Because you, of all people, know how much Grace has gone through. Yes, I said, twirling a single noodle around my fork. So sad. Tragic, really. But, I sighed. At least Jamie really loved her. She might not have him, but she has that. Nobody has ever loved me, ever. Not my parents, not Vince. Certainly not my rotten stepkids, I said, reaching for my wine glass. Never. Well, I can't speak for Zoe, but I think Alex loves you. Huh, if he does, he's got a pretty weird way of showing it. Teenagers usually do. And anyway, Bob said, never is a pretty long time. How old are you? 43, I said. Just turned. That's nothing. You've got plenty of time to find the right guy. Never going to happen, I said, moving my head back and forth. You know why? Because I am never attracted to the right guy. I'm only attracted to bums. Handsome, heartbreaking Italians whose sole purpose in life is to humiliate me and make me miserable. Monica, Bob chuckled. Come on, you're a very attractive... Nope, I said, sticking out my index finger and putting it against his lips to keep him from saying more. I'm not. I'm an idiot. I'll prove it. But only if you promise not to tell anybody. Promise? I lifted my finger from his lips. Bob raised his right hand. Okay, I'll tell you. Do you know who I went out with on Thursday? Bob shook his head. Dr. Mark Francatelli, also known as Dr. Dreamboat. He's tall, he's Italian, he's gorgeous, he's a doctor. What more could a girl want? He's the perfect man. Even my mother would approve of him. And my mother? I tipped my glass to my lips. She doesn't approve of anything, especially me. Anyway, Dr. Dreamboat came to the restaurant on Thursday, real late after his shift and mine, to take me to the movies. It was fun, a romantic comedy with that blonde girl. What's her name? You know the one I'm talking about. The blonde girl, the one with a face.
With the face?
Yeah, anyway, I said, waving my hand. Doesn't matter. So Dr. Dreamboat and I are watching the movie and splitting a bag of popcorn and a box of Junior Mints, and everything is going great. And I'm thinking, yes, this is good. This is going to work. Why? Because I finally had the sense to wait for the right guy, the perfect match, and then hold back and wait for him to come to me. I wasn't pushy, well, except for that one time, but after that I just let things lie. I didn't call him, I didn't email or forward memes or funny animal videos. I stayed away from the ER, even when I was feeling like crap, because I didn't want him to think that crazy hypochondriac lady was stalking him. For once in my life, I just played it cool and laid low, and it's finally paying off. So, about halfway through the movie, when it gets to the steamy part where the girl is getting involved with a really good-looking guy who is totally wrong for her and everybody knows it but her, Dr. Dreamboat puts his hand on my thigh. And, Bob, I said, leaning in. I gotta tell you, I didn't mind. At. All. It's been a really long time, you know?
Uh-huh,
Bob said, looking down at his plate as he spun his fork around. He'd been doing that for a while. So, after the movie, we get into the car and we start making out. So, after a while, things are getting pretty hot and heavy, you know? Bob didn't say anything, just kept spinning his fork. By this time, he had a bite of linguine about the size of a tennis ball, so big he'd have had to unhinge his jaw like a boa constrictor to be able to eat it. Then, just as we're getting kind of to the point of no return, his phone rings, and he answers it. At first, I didn't think that much about it, because he's a doctor, right? He's got to answer the phone, right? It's in the hypodermic oath or something. Hippocratic oath. Whatever. I should have suspected something right off. When his ringtone started playing the theme song from The Brady Bunch, I should have known something wasn't right. But I didn't. Why? Because I'm an idiot.
The Brady Bunch? So he's married.
So married. I tossed back some more wine, hoping, unsuccessfully, that it would wash the taste of humiliation from my mouth. 5 kids. 5! And you know what the worst part was? He didn't even try to lie about it. He just looked at me and said,
"Hey, that was my wife. The twins picked up some kind of flu bug, so I have to go home and help her out." "And he's definitely married?" Bob asked. "Not a divorced dad who's really involved in his kids' lives?"
Definitely married. And for some reason, he thought I'd be fine with that. In fact, right before he took off, leaving me to take a cab back to the restaurant, I might add, he said,
"Hey, this was fun. We should do it again soon."
"Really?" I said, throwing out my hands. Why would he think I'd be okay with helping him cheat on his wife and 5 kids? Do I look like a homewrecker?
"Not to me," Bob said, putting down his fork and the tennis balls worth of pasta. "To me, you look like a very caring, considerate, thoughtful, and loyal woman. Cute as hell to boot," he said, raising his glass.
I was so ticked off that I didn't really hear him. Why does everything always happen to me? I mean, apart from me being an idiot. I'll tell you why. Because I'm hunting for unicorns, that's why.
Bob scrunched up his face and tilted his head to one side. Unicorns?
Unicorns. Mythical creatures that don't exist outside of fairy tales. Just like perfect men. There's no such thing. Never was, never will be. I don't believe in them, not anymore.
Neither do I, Bob said. Nobody's perfect, men or women. But you know what I do believe in?
What?
Perfect matches. I believe that every now and then, 2 flawed, messed up, imperfect people can come together and all their chips and cracks and broken bits match up in such a way that, together, they're perfect. Or pretty close to it. Actually, that's the reason I came over here tonight, Monica. I've been watching you for a while now, getting to know you, your kids, your past, and your personality. I've got an idea that you and I might turn out to be a perfect match, or something close to it, and I think that warrants further investigation.
Excuse me?
Bob reached across the table to hold my hand. Monica, would you be my date for the fairy dogmother's ball? I looked at his face, then down at his hand and mine in it, then at Bob's face once again. At that point, I was tipsy enough that I didn't entirely trust my own observations, but he gave every appearance of being serious, not just about asking me to the ball, but, if I was reading the signs correctly, about exploring the possibilities of a real relationship. I didn't know what to say. I liked Bob, I did. He was easy to be around, funny, kind, calm, considerate, athletic, an excellent listener, great with kids, hard-working, dedicated, and, for a guy with Anglo-Saxon roots and a lot of consonants in his last name, pretty good-looking.
But he had nothing in common with anybody I'd ever dated or considered dating, not Mark or Johnny or Joe or Anthony or Rob, and certainly not Vince. On the other hand, given my track record, was that such a bad thing? Still, Bob. Bob Smith. I sighed. It's nice of you to ask. I like you too, a lot, but Bob...
He plucked a red rose from the vase on the table and placed it in my hand. Call me Roberto.
Chapter 33. Grace. The Crystal Ballroom. The name seemed a little overblown for an old 3-story brick building in that particular part of Portland, so near to the freeway. The neon sign near the door, topped with an image of the moon as a grinning, disembodied face, coupled with the fact that the lower floor was occupied by a pub,
made me think the place had probably seen better days, and added to the generalized anxiety that had been hovering over me all afternoon. The quip about my dress being made for dancing had sort of popped out unexpectedly. It wasn't that I hadn't understood what I was getting into, committing to 4 weeks of dance lessons with Luke. But I'd done so in the excitement of the moment, giddy from my unanticipated success, and grateful to Luke for helping to make it all possible. It wasn't until I woke up the next morning that I realized I might have left Luke with the wrong impression. Though it was awkward, I felt like I needed to call and make things clear.
"Sure," he said casually. "We're just going to dance, as friends." "I got that."
"Okay, good. I mean, I just, you know, I wanted to make sure we were on the same page."
"We are," he confirmed. "Not a problem. I'll meet you there, right?"
"Right. Thursday, 7 o'clock. See you then." Though it had to be said, it was a weird conversation and left me feeling unsettled. Fortunately, work kept me so busy that I hadn't had much time to think about it, especially since Aunt Ricky had agreed to co-sign my loan so I could get Twirl and Whirl off the ground more quickly. Two more wildly successful Saturdays had proven to me that my debut at the market hadn't been a fluke. The demand was there. People loved my twirly skirts, but I wouldn't return until I had a chance to hire some reliable help and build up the inventory so I could keep up with demand. However, apart from the 8 prepaid special orders, I hadn't sewn a thing that week, and I was so busy I'd even skipped support group. At that moment, my whole focus was on planning the future of Twirl and Whirl and turning it into a proper business. Already I had bank accounts, a company logo, a website in the works, and accounts with a fabric wholesaler. I had purchased another sewing machine and was searching for someone who knew how to use it. My first employee. For some reason, that part seemed especially daunting. I was incredibly busy, so busy that until Luke called that afternoon to ask if I needed directions, I'd forgotten about the class. I looked down the street in both directions, hoping to catch sight of Luke. I'd feel less awkward if we could go in together. Where was he? I looked at my watch, then remembered the frozen hands and checked my phone instead. It was only 6:44. Luke wasn't late. I was early. When it started raining, I reluctantly went through the doors alone and climbed the stairs to the third floor, expecting, well, I don't know what exactly, but definitely not what I found. Entering the doors of the Crystal Ballroom was like entering another world, another time, like walking onto the set of one of those old black-and-white movies I loved so much and seeing it come alive with color and sound. I stood just inside the doorway, drinking in the atmosphere, breathing deep of the scent of wood and spent candles and dust as I watched a few couples who had arrived early and were already practicing some steps. They looked so graceful, so beautiful. Were they always like that? I wondered. Or had they become so when they entered this room?
"It's really something, isn't it?"
Luke's voice, coming from behind, startled me a bit, but I was happy to see him. "The windows are amazing," I said, looking toward the 4 enormous palladium windows on the street-side wall, each one outlined by white marquee lights. "But the chandelier, I've never seen anything like it." I walked into the center of the room and stood beneath the 4-tiered crystal chandelier from which the ballroom took its name. It was part Palace of Versailles, part Carnival Midway. A fanciful, glittering jewel, embellished with blown glass flowers of vibrant coral and turquoise that straddled the border between dazzling and garish.
"Did you see the murals? That's my favorite part."
Luke pointed to one of several large medallions, also outlined with marquee lights, and painted with an assortment of fantastical scenes. In one, a couple waltzed among the clouds as angels looked on in envy. In another, a silhouetted female form wearing a crown of sunbeams balanced a moon and planet in her outstretched arms.
"It's not often you get to dance in a space that truly was designed for dancing," Luke said. "Back in the days when dancing and courtship were the same thing, my grandparents met here at a USO dance."
"Really?" I smiled. "That's so romantic."
He nodded. "They were married for 57 years. After World War II, it became more of a concert venue than an actual ballroom, Sabins now. It was closed for almost 30 years because the town was worried that rock music was corrupting the city's youth. Some people say that Little Richard fired then-unknown guitarist Jimi Hendrix in the middle of a gig they played here. Luke grinned. But I think that's just a story. Kind of a good one, though, I said, as more couples filed in. But the best part is the floor. Feel that? Luke bounced up and down on his toes, signaling me to do the same. It's kind of... I searched for a word to describe the sensation of lightness under my feet, as if the laws of gravity didn't quite apply here. Springy? Luke nodded. Exactly. It's a sprung floor. Some people call it a floating floor, specially designed to absorb shocks. There are only a few like it in the whole country. That's... Luke's explanation was interrupted when an old man walked to the front of the room and started clapping, slowly but deliberately, summoning everyone's attention. Judging from the lines on his weathered, overly tanned face, our instructor, Florian Heibels, appeared to be in his 8th decade. He wore a blue spandex jumpsuit that looked like it belonged to a 1950s fitness guru, but I had to say, he wore it well. After welcoming everyone, Florian explained the basic format of the class. Every week for the next 4 weeks, he would teach a different dance. Waltz, foxtrot, swing, and tango.
"Don't worry if you've never danced before," Florian said, speaking loudly so everyone could hear. "We're going to start at the very beginning with every dance and walk you through it step by step. This course is meant to be an overview. If you want to sign up for advanced classes later or take some private lessons, I'm at your service."
He made a small but courtly bow and came up smiling.
"But even if this is the only ballroom class you ever take, in the next 4 sessions, it's my goal to give you the skills, confidence, and desire to keep dancing. The important thing to remember," Florian said, pointing his finger and tracing an imaginary line slowly through the air, touching every couple present, "is to relax and enjoy yourself. Have fun."
Luke gave me a sidelong look. I nodded. Message received.
"Having fun is what I've been doing," Florian continued, "over the past 62 years of my dancing career, the last 45 of which I have been lucky enough to share with my partner in dance and in life, my wife, Victoria, who will now help me demonstrate this evening's dance, the waltz. Darling?"
He made a graceful arc through the air with his arm, extending his right hand to a woman who had been standing alone near the outer fringes of the group. Though Victoria appeared to be a decade younger than her husband, her hair was completely white. Her platinum tresses were drawn into an elegant twist that emphasized her long neck and beautifully balanced shoulders. Everything about her was elegant, even her walk. She all but floated across the room toward her husband, and when she took Florian's hand, the look in her eyes was a perfect mirror of his. There could be no doubt in the minds of anyone watching that the years had done nothing to decrease the ardor they felt for each other. They were still very much in love. Florian and Victoria walked toward the center of the ballroom. Stopping directly under the crystal chandelier, they turned to face each other, the fingertips of her right hand resting lightly on his shoulder, his left hand making contact at the base of her shoulder blade, their free hands clasped and held at shoulder height, looking directly into each other's eyes. Someone hit a button on the portable CD player, and the music began to play. Florian and Victoria stepped off at exactly the same moment, their movements so perfectly synchronized it was as if they were thinking the same thoughts. They continued that way throughout the dance, like two people who were one, twirling in each other's arms, floating across the floor, creating a large oval around the room. They were fascinating to watch. I couldn't have taken my eyes off them if I'd wanted to. They were true to the rhythm of the music, but also played with its possibilities. Sometimes they moved slowly, even sinuously, hesitating briefly to strike a pose,
Victoria's back arching like a bowstring as she turned her head to one side, emphasizing the long, supple line of her body. Sometimes they moved quickly and with sudden energy, Florian pulling his wife close before they stepped off into a series of dizzyingly rapid spins. As they spun and dipped and twirled, the crepe and chiffon layers of Victoria's blue dress fluttered like a flag in a fresh breeze. It really was a dress made for dancing. Finally, the music slowed and Florian guided his wife back to the place where they'd begun, right under the chandelier. Once again, Victoria arched away from her husband, her movement slow and languorous. She lifted her arm slightly from his shoulder, tracing an elegant arc above her head as her beautiful and smiling face turned toward the audience. In that breath between the final note and the ringing burst of applause that came after, I had two connected and conflicting thoughts. First, that I could never in a million years imagine myself being able to dance like that. Second, that I really, really wanted to try. Breathing heavily from the exertion of their efforts, Florian and Victoria bowed and curtsied to acknowledge the applause. I was clapping so hard my hands hurt. "Doesn't that look like fun?" Florian asked. "I bet you can't wait to try. So, let's get started. Face your partner, and let's stand in the closed position. Like this." Victoria turned toward him and they connected at shoulder, back, and hand, as they had before. There was a noise of shuffling and some awkward laughter as the students, including Luke and I, assumed the position. When everyone was set, Florian and Victoria walked around the room, offering advice and adjustments. "Very nice," Victoria said when she came to check on us. "Just lift your arm a bit," she said, touching me on the elbow. "And keep that nice curve in your arm, like you're getting ready to hug an enormous oak tree. That's it. Lovely." "All right," Florian said after every couple had been inspected and corrected. "I think we're ready to learn the basic waltz step. Yes?" "But," he said, lifting his chin high, sounding suddenly serious, "before we begin, it is only fair to warn you that the waltz made me fall in love with my darling Victoria. It's a beautiful dance, but a powerful one, eh? So, unless you're ready to fall in love for a lifetime, perhaps you should sit this week out." A murmur of laughter passed through the crowd. Luke, who had been watching Florian, laughed too. But when he turned back toward me and saw the look on my face, his expression became solemn. "He's kidding, Grace. It's only a dance." I shifted my eyes from his face to my feet. He was right. It was only a dance. I took a breath and looked up. Luke clasped my hand and smiled. "Ready?" "Ready," I said. The music began.
Chapter 34, Monica. With only a couple of weeks remaining until the ball, it was time to think about costumes. So on Monday, instead of our usual support group meeting, I suggested a field trip. I held the door so I could get a good look at Grace's face when she walked inside. Her reaction was all I thought it would be. "Oh, wow." She blinked a few times. "What did I tell you? The Fabric Depot. 40,000 square feet of retail space. 20,000 different fabrics. If you don't find something you like for your costumes here, you never will." "How did I not know about this place? It's amazing," Grace said, her voice almost reverent as her eyes scanned the brilliantly hued horizon, row after row and bolt after bolt of satin, silk, wool, taffeta, tulle, chintz, chenille, chiffon, chambray, corduroy, cotton, and broadcloth, in every imaginable color, pattern, texture, and weight. "How are we even going to figure out where to start?" "Maybe with actually getting everybody inside the building," I said, looking back through the doorway to the parking lot. Zoe was walking toward the door at a snail's pace, shuffling toward the entrance while she thumbed a text message into her phone. "Were you planning to join us any time this year?" This was your idea, she grumbled. Not mine. Isn't the whole point of being grounded that you have to stay home? Don't think of it as being grounded so much as punished, I said. When I can trust you to stay home, then you get to stay home. But since I can't, and since your brother is at a basketball game, you have to go with me. See how that works? I asked, flashing a fake smile. I hate you, Zoe glowered. Do you know that? I don't care. Do you know that? Zoe all but hissed as she slunk through the door, still texting, staring into her phone, but holding it at an angle that made it impossible for me to see the screen. And since you hate me anyway, I really don't feel bad about doing this. I plucked the phone from her hand. She started to howl. What? No, give it back. I turned my back to Zoe, blocking her frantic attempts to recapture her phone. As I scanned the texts, waves of disappointment, weariness, and frustration washed over me. But when I spotted the picture, frustration turned to fury. That is it, I spat. Zoe, I have had it. You are 13 years old. Ryan Plummer is almost 17. In case I hadn't already made it clear, when I punished you for sneaking out of your bedroom window to hook up with Ryan and said you couldn't see him anymore, that also meant you couldn't text him anymore. Honestly, I felt like shaking her. Instead, I pushed my face up into hers, desperately trying to get her attention, if not her understanding. It wasn't working. She turned her head away, and I grabbed hold of her shoulders. Zoe, you have got to listen to me. This boy is way, way too old for you. Only 3 years, Zoe countered, finally looking at me. Daddy was 5 years older than you. Zoe, 5 years in your 40s is a whole different thing than 3 years when you're barely out of grade school. Besides, look how that worked out. That's because Daddy never loved you, Zoe spat as tears sprung into her eyes. But Ryan loves me. Zoe's observation wasn't exactly breaking news, but that didn't mean it didn't hurt. Like her brother, Zoe knew the location of all my vulnerable spots and how to strike to inflict maximum damage. Did she do it by plan or by instinct? I wasn't sure, but it didn't matter at that moment. I was the adult here. I was the mother. And this girl, this rotten, selfish, stupid girl, was my responsibility. It was my job to protect her from all threats, including herself. I turned the phone around so Zoe would be forced to see the screen the way I was seeing it. I see. He loves you. Is that why he's texting you pictures of himself in his underwear? Zoe's cheeks flushed red. She looked down at her feet. Zoe, a guy who wears briefs that say, Unleash the Beast, is looking for a lot of things, but love isn't one of them. If you've had sex with this boy... Her head popped up. I haven't. Zoe raised her hand out flat as if she was taking an oath. Really, I haven't, I swear. All we've done so far is just fool around a little. She paused, her cheeks flaming anew. I let him touch my boobs. I closed my eyes and rubbed my forehead. My head was pounding. What was I going to do with this girl? I just want him to like me, Zoe said, her voice a whimper. Oh, Zoe. The irritation of a moment before drained away instantly, replaced by pity. Honey, I know. We all want that. But that's not the way to do it. I held the phone up again. This isn't just fooling around, or it won't be for very long. Ryan knows exactly where he's trying to lead you. For a moment, it felt like I was getting through to her, but then her eyes glazed over again. I wanted Zoe to like me, to make her understand that I was acting in her best interests. But if I couldn't do that... Zoe, you are 13 years old, I said. If Ryan gets what he wants, the state of Oregon calls that second-degree rape, and I will absolutely press charges. Zoe's jaw dropped. But he never made me. Your consent means nothing here, I said. I know you don't like hearing this, Zoe, but you're still a child. The law is there to protect you, and whether you like it or not, so am I. That's why I'm keeping your phone.
Monica! She cried, tears spilling over. You can't. What if there's an emergency? How will I talk to my friends? What am I supposed to do all day?
Since you're going to be either at school, at home, or with me, there will be someone to help if you have an emergency. You'll see your friends at school. If you want to talk to them after school, then you can call them on the house phone. As far as ways for you to keep busy, we'll think of something. Now, come on. I put Zoe's phone in my purse and started walking toward Grace, who was standing at the far end of the store looking through bolts of sateen. Zoe trailed along, dragging her feet and weeping.
I hate you, Monica, she said,
sniffling and gulping air. I know.
Why are you trying to ruin my life?
I'm not, I said, keeping my eyes straight ahead. I'm trying to save it.
Chapter 35. Grace.
You're sure this time?
Monica asked. Because you've put that same blue silk in the cart and then taken it out again 3 times now. Yes, absolutely. The green satin was too heavy, and blue is a good color on me. Plus, it's on sale, I said. Yep, blue. Final answer. Zoe, whose face was a study in boredom, sighed dramatically.
About time. Can we go now?
No, Monica answered. I still need to pick out fabric for my costume. You'll help me sew it, won't you, Grace? I just need some kind of gingham jumper or pinafore, nothing fancy.
Though my decision to postpone my return to the Saturday market until after the ball had taken off some of the pressure, I was still very busy. But so was Monica. The Dog Mother's Ball was nearly sold out. There was no way she could run the restaurant, cater a dinner for 125 people, and make a costume for the event. I doubted she'd be able to leave the kitchen long enough for anybody to see her costume, but still, she deserved to get in on the fun.
Sure, I said. A pinafore won't be hard. What are you going as?
Little Miss Muffet. I found a hilarious spider outfit for Desmond online, so he's all set. I planned to buy mine online, too, but all I could find was sexy Miss Muffet. She stuck a finger into her mouth, pretending to gag.
Really? Sexy nursery rhyme characters? Since when did Halloween and costume parties get to be one more excuse to objectify women and cater to bizarre male fetishes?
You're going as Miss Muffet? Zoe made a face. That's so lame.
That's so lame, Monica parroted, making her voice a whine. Fine, Miss Fashionista. What do you think I should go as?
A Kardashian? The set of Zoe's mouth and rapid-fire response told me she'd prepared her answer in advance, specifically to annoy Monica. Surprisingly, Monica didn't take the bait.
I'm serious, Zoe. If you were going to a ball and could have any costume you wanted, any costume that won't get you arrested, I mean, what would it be?
Zoe, who seemed surprised to be asked for her opinion, took a moment to think.
Pirates, she said finally. From France, but girl pirates with a big hat with feathers and strings of pearls and a ruffled blouse and a big swooshy skirt. You'd need to tuck the skirt up into your belt so you could fight, and a sword on the belt, too, a gold one, and black boots.
Wow, I said. That seems pretty specific.
I was reading this book about pirates, Zoe said. Turns out a bunch of them were girls from all over the world. I thought it was pretty cool. Usually in the adventure stories, the guys are the only ones having fun. The girls either stay home and wait for them to come back, or get kidnapped and wait to be rescued. Boring. But these girl pirates, they were in charge of whole ships and crews, and they sailed all over the place and robbed treasure and fought in battles. And they were real. Sometimes they got captured or killed, so that kind of sucked. But at least they had adventures. And I bet the French pirates had really cool clothes. Because, you know, she said, and shrugged.
France.
Right, Monica said, because that's where all the cool clothes come from. Okay, you've convinced me. We're going to the ball as French girl pirates.
We?
I'm going to need a crew, right? You can't be a pirate if you don't have a pirate band.
Zoe shot her a suspicious look.
Hey, you don't have to go. I can always ask Alex to babysit.
After an eye roll,
probably her 50th of the evening, Zoe said, "Okay, fine. But can I bring a friend?"
"That depends. This is an all-girl crew," Monica reminded her.
"Not Ryan. Zinnia Applegate, she's in my English class."
"Sure, but Zinnia?"
"I know, right?" Another eye roll. "Her parents are crazy, too.
I'm going to go look at that purple stuff over there," Zoe said, pointing to an entire shelf of violet-hued fabrics.
"Purple is good for pirates." Once Zoe was out of earshot, I said, "5 minutes ago she hated your guts. Now you're the leader of the all-girl pirate band?"
"Don't be too impressed," Monica said. "In another 5 minutes, she'll probably hate me again. But at least she's speaking to me. If I ever get Zoe and Alex speaking to me at the same time, then you can be impressed."
"Ha! Well, I guess we better start looking for swishy skirt fabric," I said, trying not to think too hard about the fact that I now needed to make 2 warrior pirate outfits instead of 1 and come up with something for Desmond as well. Maybe just a hat and eye patch? But pirate costumes would definitely be more fun to make than a Miss Muffet outfit, and if it meant Zoe and Monica might start getting along better, then it was more than worth the effort. I steered my cart toward a promising-looking Isle of Taffeta. Monica came along.
"I was surprised Nan didn't come tonight. Is she okay?"
"I talked to her a couple of days ago," Monica said. "She's fine. Just has a lot going on, trying to get the garden in shape for the ball. And she said she's all set for costumes. They're going as the cast of The Wizard of Oz. Nan will be Dorothy, Malcolm will be the Tin Man, Blixen will be the Cowardly Lion, Stuart will be the Scarecrow, and Nelson will be Toto."
"What about Lovey?"
"Adopted by a nice family who lives in the country and already has 1 bulldog."
"What about that?" Monica said,
pointing at a bolt of purple, green, and gold plaid taffeta.
I pulled it off the shelf and held it up to Monica's face.
"That's actually kind of perfect.
I'll make your skirt from this and Zoe's with whatever fabulous purple thing she finds. I think we're going to need petticoats, too. Just plain cotton, but we'll need lace to trim the hem." I plunked the plaid bolt into the cart.
"The Wizard of Oz costumes were Malcolm's idea," Monica reported as we headed toward the ribbon and trim section of the store. "He's so much fun, and he couldn't be more perfect for Nan. The whole must-love-dogs thing to begin with. He's as excited about raising money for the rescue as Nan is. Besides helping with the gardening, Malcolm booked the band, figured out the lighting and sound. Such a good guy."
"And the brogue," she said, clapping her hand to her chest. "Is there anything sexier than a man with an accent?"
"They do make a great couple," I agreed.
"But if I were Nan, I think I'd rather he come to the ball as a Highland warrior. There's just something about a man in a kilt."
"Speaking of men in costume," I said, examining some eyelet lace that was on sale, "how is Bob going to feel about joining the all-girl pirate band?"
"Shoot, I hadn't thought about that.
Maybe he can be our hostage."
"Actually," she said, raising and lowering her eyebrows, "he might like that."
"Okay, yeah, too much information. Do the kids know about you 2 yet?"
Monica shook her head. I shot her a look and put the eyelet lace back onto the shelf, rejecting it in favor of a 2-tiered white cotton lace that somehow seemed more pirate period to me.
"I'm not avoiding the subject," Monica said. "Honestly, I've just been so crazy busy. When I get home at night, I'm so tired I fall into bed. Don't tell Nan I said so, but I'll be glad when the ball is over. I've just got too much on my plate."
She did. It was true. So did I. So did Nan. But Monica looked so tired. If Monica hadn't been Monica, i.e. the biggest hypochondriac in Portland and therefore prone to panic over all things medical, I might have suggested she go in for a checkup. But she'd been in the ER not that long ago, with the scary rash that turned out to be paprika. If there was something wrong, surely they'd have caught it then. And it wasn't like she didn't have cause for fatigue.
"I get it," I said. "When all this is over, we all ought to go away for a few days, rent a condo at the beach or something."
"Wouldn't that be great?" Monica sighed. "My cousin Lisa has a big beach house in Lincoln City. She's offered to let me use it a bunch of times, but I've never taken her up on it."
Maybe I should, she mused. I could just close the restaurant for a week in late August. It had cost me some money, but I really need a break. So does the staff. Ben is such a pain right now. Monica looked at me. What do you think? Could August work for you? Or will you be too slammed?
I might not be able to take the whole week, but maybe a couple of days. It kind of depends on how things work out with my new employee.
I stopped, thought about what I'd just said, and laughed. Boy, those are two words I never thought I'd hear coming out of my mouth. Hey, Monica said, correctly reading the undertone of anxiety in my laughter. Every entrepreneur feels like that when they're starting out. You're going to be good at this, Grace. You already are, and you'll be a good boss. You know why? I shook my head, and she grinned. Because you know how miserable it is to work for a bad one.
Oh, I exclaimed. Speaking of bad bosses, Denise, who worked in accounting at Spectre, called me yesterday and said Gavin got fired.
Really? Monica said, her eyes lighting up in the same way mine had when I heard the news. So your letter to the CEO worked.
Oh, I doubt that was the reason, I said, while secretly hoping it was. But it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Ava is taking his place, which is great. She'll be a great boss.
She really liked you, didn't she? Monica asked. Any chance of her asking you to come back?
Well, I said slowly, I think that's why Denise called me. She didn't come right out and say so, but she kind of hinted at it. But I told her I'm happy doing what I'm doing. I laughed. Of course, I might end up regretting that later. There's a very good chance this whole thing will turn out to have been a terrible idea. But I'm going to do everything I can to make it work. I really feel like this is what I'm supposed to do with my life, and I'm having a great time doing it.
Good for you, Monica said. That's how it should be.
So who's your employee, and how is she working out?
Billy Dawson, I said. She starts next week. Nan found her at the grief support group, another misfit. Her husband died of a heart attack about 6 months ago. He was only 56. And she needs a job?
Yes, but she also needs something to do. She's kind of squirrely.
I smiled, recalling the rapid-fire way she talked and her fidgety hands.
She said she hadn't sewn since high school, but 5 minutes after I sat her down at the machine, it all came back. She sews like lightning. I like her. I think it'll be a good arrangement for both of us. And
the sudden catch in my throat caught me by surprise. I swallowed quickly and plucked a roll of blue tulle off a nearby shelf.
What do you think of this for Maisie's tutu, if I glued on some sequins?
Cute, Monica replied without even looking at it. Grace, what's wrong?
Nothing, I swiped at my eyes. It's stupid.
Grace?
It's nothing bad, really, I said, smiling to prove I was telling the truth. In fact, it was kind of sweet. When Billy came over for the interview, she saw my quilt blocks. She asked me about them, so I started telling her stories about Jamie. Then she started talking about her husband, Pete. It was really good. Billy's decided to make a quilt for Pete, too.
Oh, Grace! Monica grabbed me and hugged me hard. That's great. It sounds like you really helped her.
She helped me more. If Jamie and I had had a baby, I'd be telling our child all those stories, but
the dam in my throat broke and I started to cry in earnest, clutching her shoulder like it was the only solid thing in the world.
Oh, Monica, I'm so afraid I'm going to forget about him.
Forget Jamie? Her eyes went wide. That is never, ever, ever going to happen. The things you and Jamie learned together and went through together will be part of you always. He's a part of who you are. Nothing and no one will ever change that. Monica squeezed me even tighter, making sure I was steady before putting her hands on my shoulders and pushing me back so she could look into my eyes. Is this about Luke? It's all right for you to care about him. It doesn't mean you didn't love Jamie or will ever love him less.
It's not that, I said, swiping at my eyes, putting the lid back on. I just get emotional sometimes. I miss him. I think I always will.
Sure, Monica said. Why wouldn't you? He deserves to be missed.
He does, I said, clear-eyed again. And Luke's just a friend.
A pretty good friend, I'd say.
I nodded. There was no denying it.
So if you're going to the ball as Cinderella, will Luke be Prince Charming or the Frog?
Oh, wait, Monica frowned. The Frog is a whole different story, right?
I shook my head.
Maisie is my date for the ball.
Monica tilted her head to one side and looked at me the way she would have if she'd caught me in a lie.
Luke and I are just friends, I said. We dance, we have fun, and then we go home. That's it.
Okay, Monica said. So if you're just friends, then what's the big deal? You like to dance, he likes to dance, and there's going to be a really good band. It'll be just like class. You'll dance, you'll have fun, and then you'll go home. Shouldn't be a problem.
She waited for me to speak.
Unless you're afraid of what happens if Luke becomes more than a friend?
Monica drew her face close to mine. Her normally brash voice was almost a whisper. Grace, listen to me. You're not doing anything wrong. You can love Luke and love Jamie, too. It doesn't change anything. Doesn't it?
Chapter 36. Grace. As the introductory measures played, I mentally checked my dance position, making sure my shoulders pressed down and my neck was long, that I was standing just off center from Luke with my back just slightly arched. Florian counted off the final beats, 5, 6, 7, 8, and everyone stepped off to the rhythm of the castanets. Slow, slow, quick, quick, slow, Florian chanted as we moved across the floor, performing two basic tango steps, then a progressive link to point us in the right direction before we transitioned into our promenade step.
Better, Florian said when we got to the end of the combination. But remember, tango is about attitude and power and passion, he said, pronouncing the S with a dramatic hiss. Let's try it again.
Good ballroom dancers make dancing look as easy and instinctive as taking a walk. If you're doing it right, that's how it looks. That's not how it is. We practiced the combination over and over. I knew the steps perfectly well, but I was stiff and awkward executing them. Florian kept saying, "Relax, Grace. Quit thinking so much. You're supposed to be enjoying yourself." But the more he said it, the more I did the opposite. On the next attempt, when I tried to make an inside turn instead of an outside, we got so tangled up that it's a miracle we didn't fall. It was embarrassing. I was sure everyone was staring. Florian called a 5-minute break. I grabbed my water bottle and stood by the wall, feeling disgusted with myself. Luke came over and leaned against the wall, standing next to me but staring straight ahead.
Do you know what ballroom dance really is? He asked.
Something I suck at?
I was trying to be funny, sort of, but Luke wasn't in the mood for banter. It's a conversation, he said. A dialogue between a man and a woman. Dancing lets you use your body to express all the thoughts and feelings that you can't, or won't, or shouldn't, or don't know how to say. It's one of the earliest, honest, most universal forms of communication. If you can see it, you can understand it. Here, he said, pressing his fist to his chest. But only if you trust your partner. At last he turned toward me. Grace, forget about everybody else. Forget about what you think you're supposed to feel or be. This is a conversation between you and me. Nobody else, okay?
I looked up at him, finally meeting his eyes. Okay.
Good, he said. Let's dance.
When Luke's fingers closed around mine, I felt a shudder run the length of my spine, through my arms, and all the way to the end of my fingertips, a sensation that seemed to connect us at every point of contact, like an electrical current. And this time, when the castanets rattled and the accordion trilled, I didn't need to count anymore, or to think about which steps came next, or which direction to turn. I saw it in Luke's eyes.
felt it through the skin of his hand. Our bodies only connected within the space of a palm print, but it felt like there was only one pulse between us and one set of intentions. We led each other, followed each other, moved and breathed in perfect sync.